Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for It's May, the lusty month of May, always been one of my favorite months. It's the 1st of May, and coming up in just a moment, Craig Gilbert will be joining us, Washington Bureau Chief of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We'll talk about the president's press conference yesterday, the hunger strike at Guantanamo. Craig has written a very interesting piece on the gun votes cast by Senators Johnson and Baldwin, illustrating a huge ideological chasm between Wisconsin's two senators, arguably, he writes, the largest of any state. Later in the hour, Jason Brozek will join us, assistant professor of government, and we will look at what's going on in Syria with him. So those conversations are coming up. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Gina Dragutinovich, and today is One Day Wednesday. As you know, you rely on WPR to bring clarity to the day's events, to engage your mind with lively discussion. Yesterday, one of our callers said he was getting brain stimulation by talking about the cosmos. We, of course, rely on the money that you give to keep all of those news items and all of our great discussion growing strong.
That's right. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Gina.
We're here to raise money for the programs you rely on with just one day of on-air fundraising. Make your pledge of any amount right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're aiming, Gina, to meet our goal of 2,000 pledges by 7 o'clock tonight with one day of on-air fundraising, which is great for everybody. And we're going to reach that goal together, hour by hour, pledge by pledge. Our goal this hour is 95 pledges.
And that's right. Making this one day fund drive a success means we need to hear from you right now, not tomorrow, not next week. Give now as generously as you can at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You may have found yourself hovering near the radio, drawn into a great discussion. Yesterday we learned about the origins of the universe. It was just fascinating. And you need to get somewhere, but the discussion is really interesting. It's like when we get to the end of the hour, and I hate to have it end because there's so much more to talk about. You appreciate the guest's knowledge. You really appreciate, and so do the guests, the callers' questions and views, because that has happened to you. Make your pledge of support, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with a few minutes of your time. Just give us your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. Whether you call or pledge online, we keep your personal information safe. We don't share it with any other organization.
Your gift supports all of the stories, the programs that keep you connected to the world. So please give now. Let's get this baby going. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A donation to Wisconsin Public Radio has a greater impact than you might realize.
I have the power to participate and be heard.
I have the power to share stories from our shared Wisconsin past.
I have the power to learn with and about other people who don't think like me.
Today, as we fit an entire pledge drive into one day, you have the power to make it a success. Here's someone to tell you how.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Gina Dragutinovich, and we are asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio on this One Day Wednesday. Your gift might be $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're trying to get an entire pledge drive done by 7 o'clock tonight. That's an entire pledge drive with just one day of on-air fundraising. And we can do it, but only with your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, Craig Gilbert will be joining us, a really fine political analyst and writer. He's Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and is a fairly regular guest on our program. We'll also be speaking with an assistant professor of government and professor of international affairs at Lawrence University. As you know, we spend a lot of time deeply analyzing and creatively analyzing all that's going on in the world. We'll do just that in a moment. And all of these discussions are possible because of your financial support. So please give now. It's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio listeners become Wisconsin Public Radio contributors for various reasons, and one of the main reasons is they want to make a difference. Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is the one way to make a difference and help your local community.
Your pledge today will not only pay for the programs you listen to, it also gives others the chance to discover WPR. So please make that difference. Make this one-day drive, which we all believe in and we want to have be successful. Make the difference with $5 a month or really whatever amount is comfortable for you. It's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right. We have 95 pledges to go this hour. We've got a few in already, so let's keep that going. This is a one-day drive. It's a powerful day, and you have the power to make it a success. When you give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we also want to thank our sustaining members who give WPR reliable monthly support. So if you're already a sustainer, thank you very much. Make today the day that you increase your support of WPR by $5 a month or whatever amount you choose. Give us a call, 888-202-2552.
And you'll get our colorful 2013 artist mug. It's designed by a Wisconsin artist, and that's with your pledge of $10 a month or more. It'll make you happy every time you see it.
It's darling.
It is.
It really is.
So the fun starts when you pledge today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we thank all of you who have made your pledges. I really appreciate Edna from Oshkosh says WPR, and I want to support all of the programming. And that's it. That's why you pledge. That's it. Thank you, Edna. Thanks, everybody who's pledging.
That's right. Your pledge right now is important. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Thank you, Gina. Craig Gilbert is joining us now, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The president had a press conference yesterday in which he talked about a variety of issues. Craig has written a very interesting piece, and this is one of the issues that we talk about frequently, about the ideological chasm between Wisconsin's two senators, arguably the biggest of any state, and we always try to analyze how it happened that we sent two people with very different ideologies to Washington. So we'll talk about their gun votes. We'll talk about the Guantanamo hunger strike, the press conference that the president gave yesterday, the economy, sequestration, etc. Craig Gilbert, hello. Thank you so much for being with us. Happy May.
How are you?
It's May. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. I'm actually in Wisconsin right now. It's been nice in D.C. for some time, but I know it just got nice here. So
yeah, isn't it? Well, take yourself a nice walk today. Well, let's start with the president's press conference yesterday, Craig. Did anything – I was really struck by this hunger strike that's taking place in Guantanamo, and I have no idea what the president does about this situation, but it obviously can't continue. What struck you about what he covered yesterday?
Well, I'm sort of looking at it a little bit secondhand because I came back here to actually follow Paul Ryan around as he did his first listening sessions in his district since he was on the presidential ticket in Wisconsin. So I didn't watch. I was with Ryan in Elkhorn, Burlington, and Oak Creek yesterday, and Racine and Kenosha today. It's an interesting moment for the president, and you see a lot of discussion about what he can and can't accomplish in his second term, the limits of his power. When something doesn't happen, like guns the other day, some people look at it through the prism of, why didn't the president get it passed? Obviously, there's a lot more going on than the president's role, which is always important. But in a lot of these cases, you've got, especially with government divided the way it is, a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of obstacles to getting anything done in Washington right now.
Well, let's talk about Paul Ryan. You wrote a piece recently about the divisions within the Republican Party being a huge key to the politics of immigration reform. When you look at someone like Paul Ryan and look at someone like Jim Sensenbrenner, you have a great difference of opinion about immigration reform.
Yeah. I mean, Jim Sensenbrenner obviously is you know, perceived as more of a hardliner. He drafted this bill that the House passed and that Ryan voted for back in 2005, which was a sort of get-tough immigration bill, which was very controversial. And, you know, at that moment, I mean, Sensenbrenner really kind of became, for some people on the other side of these issues, the kind of the face of the Republican Party. And you've got Paul Ryan coming along now, who has a kind of an interesting and long and somewhat nuanced history on the issue of immigration, and stepping out of his role as budget chair, just dealing with fiscal issues, and wanting to get involved in trying to kind of broker a bill that that will bring that will get bipartisan support in the House, and that, you know, could be the foundation for an agreement between the House and the Senate. It's really hard to do, but he's out there kind of trying to get a comprehensive immigration bill passed, and it's a bill who's, you know, with some features that people like Jim Sensenbrenner are very skeptical about, particularly this issue of providing a so-called earned path to citizenship, where you allow you know, a lot of the undocumented immigrants who are in this country illegally to kind of earn their way to a path to citizenship by meeting a lot of thresholds, including taxes and background checks and employment, mm-hmm. and learning English, and then waiting many years before they can apply for citizenship. So that's a dividing line in the Republican Party. There's differences between the House and the Senate. The House, the Senate could pass a bill that, I think Marco Rubio, one of the co-authors of the Senate bill, the bipartisan Senate bill, acknowledged the other day that that bill probably couldn't pass the House. So the House is going to come up with a more conservative bill. But it could be a bill that, you know, provides a foundation for an agreement between the two chambers.
And what is and why is there a long history on the immigration issue with Paul Ryan?
Well, because when he was a staffer, he worked for Jack Kemp, who was sort of a pro-immigration guy. This is many years ago. Actually, when he worked for Bob Caston, Bob Caston's key staff person, Cesar Conda, is now Marco Rubio's chief of staff. And he kind of, I think he sees himself as coming out of that wing of the Republican Party that that is more favorable to immigration, you know, that's kind of big tent and also pro-business. So in that sense, you know, business is a constituency for doing something about, for really pushing immigration reform. And he has taken positions in the past. I mean, this isn't the first time he's supported legislation that talked about a path to either legalization or citizenship. I mean, he has done that in the past, but he's also, you know, he also voted for the Sensenbrenner bill, and also in, you know, he was, when I traveled with him a few years ago around his district, he was very skeptical of these bills and talked about opposing amnesty and was also very skeptical of passing a so-called comprehensive bill where you try to solve all these different problems at once, and now he's in favor of that approach.
Craig Gilbert is joining us. He's Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. When we continue our conversation, he wrote a very interesting piece about the gun vote that took place a couple weeks ago, with Senator Johnson voting with the majority of his party on all 8 amendments, Senator Baldwin voting with the majority of her party on all 8 amendments. There are senators who are facing some dissatisfaction from voters on their votes and have been confronted at town hall meetings. We'll ask Craig, does either one of those senators face that in the state of Wisconsin, or are we different in some substantial way? We also, I don't want to exclude you from the conversation, so if you'd like to join our conversation with Craig, because we have a lot going on today, I would recommend that you call in right now, 800-486-8655, our number, 800-486-8655. This also is our one-day pledge drive, and let's make this successful so we can do these all the time and skip those long pledge drives. Everybody would be a lot happier. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Gina Dragutinovich, and you really do, you make this program possible when you make a pledge of support, and do it today during One Day Wednesday.
That's right. Like Kathleen said, this membership drive is only one day long, and that means more talk about the issues you care about, less fundraising. But it only works when you give. So give right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're looking for how many pledges, Gina?
We have about 80 more to go this hour.
All right, 80 more pledges, and we have about how many minutes? Math was never a strong suit.
40
minutes. So thank you. Yep. All right. So the hourly goals are very important to make sure that we end One Day Wednesday successfully.
And that's right. It's a gift of $5 or $10 a month, and that's all it takes. Your gift now will help pay for Wisconsin Public Radio listening for the year. Give at WPR.org. or 888-202-2552.
Think about all the topics that you have heard discussed on the Ideas Network in the past year. Heck, think about the last week. It's phenomenal. There are so many. And all of those conversations were possible because of listener support. Please make your pledge right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Do it for this reason. It's the best reason. Do it for all you have learned in the past year on Wisconsin Public Radio.
That's right. And giving couldn't be easier. We just need your name, contact information, the amount of the pledge, and how you'd like to pay.
Or you can save time and money and use a credit card if you can. Or, better yet, start automatic sustaining donations directly from your bank account. You choose how to give, and then you do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On Wisconsin Public Radio, you get programs that inform and inspire you, programs that entertain and engage you. Yet you get these programs at the touch of a button or the click of a mouse anytime you want.
What makes it all possible? You do. People who contribute to it make it happen for themselves and also for others.
And at Wisconsin Public Radio, membership matters. Become a member with your pledge of $5 a month or whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's a one-day Wednesday pledge drive, as the name says, just one day. Tomorrow it's back to regular programming. We'll have great shows for you again tomorrow. We do today as well. Jeremy Scahill will be joining us tomorrow. He's written a new book. And Charlie Kernaghan, who knows more and has done more to change working conditions in factories like places like Bangladesh than anybody on this planet. He is a marvelous man. Help us raise the money today that we need to pay for all of those programs and make One Day Wednesday a success with your pledge of support, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks, Gina, very much. Craig Gilbert is joining us, and we're welcoming phone calls, too. Our number is 800-486-8655 for you to join the conversation with Craig. And let's go to a phone call. Andrew is calling us, Craig from Shorewood. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. Yeah, I mean, for me, the immigration issue is very much about the cost of doing business in America. And it just seems to me like there are so many other things we could be tackling, taxes, regulations, things like the cost of energy, putting more money into research and development to bring down costs to do business here. I don't see any of those issues being dealt with, but maybe I'm just not paying attention. I mean, are people talking about things like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. There's always a lot out in the air in Washington, and this isn't the only issue people are dealing with. And also, this debate is going to occur over a fairly lengthy period of time. I mean, you've got both a Senate track and a House track. It's going to go into the summer and through the summer. So it's not the only thing Congress is doing right now. I mean, there's some, you know, it's coming together, and the politics often dictates the timing of these issues. And obviously, the 2012 elections created kind of more of an incentive for some Republicans to try to get this done because of their fear of what's happened to the Latino vote and what that means for the Republican Party in future elections. So there's more of a political will to do it now on both sides of the aisle. Whether that doesn't mean it's going to happen because it's a tough issue, but it's not the only thing Congress is doing. There are economic pieces to this as well. There's a lot of different parts of immigration reform, and there's some people that want to do them separately, but the people that are kind of behind these big comprehensive approaches think that politically it has to be done together because there's all these trade-offs, and if you just do one piece of it, you're going to lose the coalition. So the economic part of it, you know, is sort of, you know, what do you do about guest workers? It's about providing enough agricultural labor, and it's about providing enough high-tech labor. And so that's a big part of it, as along with the sort of more controversial hot-button issue of citizenship.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Latino vote, Craig. If the Republicans do much better, and I'm wondering how much better they have to do with the Latino vote, can they win more elections, or is their strategy much broader than that, and does it need to be much broader?
Well, it does need to be broader than that, but certainly in the long run, they have to improve their performance among Latino voters to be competitive in presidential politics. Now, obviously, the Latino vote isn't spread evenly out across the country, but, you know, it's substantial in a handful of battleground states. And, again, these are long-term demographic trends where it could bring states that are now safely red, like Texas and Arizona, into competition, which would really be fatal for the Republican Party, as well as tip, and it's already begun to tip, you know, battleground states in the Southwest, like New Mexico and Colorado and Nevada, in a Democratic direction. So if those trends continue and the sort of those Southwestern battleground states are lost to the Republican Party, then the Republican Party would have to suddenly start winning states in the upper Midwest, like Wisconsin and Michigan and mm-hmm. Minnesota and Iowa, where they've struggled. And so that's the kind of overarching politics of it. It doesn't necessarily keep the Republican Party from maintaining control of the House because of the way the districts are drawn in the House. And it doesn't necessarily keep the Republican Party from being competitive in the Senate. But it's really a big deal in presidential politics.
You wrote a very interesting piece on Ron Johnson and Tammy Baldwin, their votes on gun legislation. We've been reading that those who voted against gun legislation are seeing a lowering of their poll numbers, people being confronted at town hall meetings, et cetera, and large amounts of money going into campaigns to run people against them. In the state of Wisconsin, you say it's a partisan battleground with lots of gun owners. Wisconsin is one state where there may be electoral risks on both sides of this hot-button issue.
Yeah, well, traditionally, you know, we're talking about a state where, you know, according to the exit poll in 2012, more than half the voters live in a household where there's a gun. And so in the past, we've seen Democrats like Dave Obey and Russ Feingold take some pro-gun rights votes and perhaps reflecting the politics in the state of Wisconsin. So there's always been sort of a risk for Democrats in the gun issue. But at the same time, when you talk about the votes that took place the other day in the Senate, where you had background checks getting, you know, 80-90% popular approval in states across the country, including Wisconsin, you know, it's fair to wonder if there are risks on the Republican side for someone like Ron Johnson, who not only voted against expanding background checks and voted basically with his party and against gun restrictions on all the votes that took place, but also took the position in a letter with 12 other senators that he would filibuster any new gun restrictions. So he's taken a kind of a hard line on the other side of the issue, and you know, there could be political risks for him in that, at least when you're talking about the more popular forms of gun restrictions. I mean, assault weapons ban is not going to rise to the level, for example, of, I think, of being a political threat to Ron Johnson, his opposition to assault weapons, but his opposition to background checks could. And it came up even with in the meetings yesterday with Paul Ryan, who didn't have to vote on it. He got asked about it. There were people at the meeting that are upset about the failure to pass background checks. And, you know, his position is kind of interesting. I mean, his position is that he does support expanding background checks online and at gun shows, but there were things he didn't like about the Senate version of that proposal. So he's taking, a kind of a more mixed position on background checks. He's saying, I'm open just to some additional background checks, even though he says he opposed the version that was up before the Senate. But it came up and he got asked about it because there are some people out there that are obviously upset about the vote.
So what changed on this issue after being an issue that we didn't deal with for years and years? Is it a combination of of Newtown and the money from Gabby Giffords and Michael Bloomberg?
Yeah, I think it's all Newtown. But again, you know, it remains to be seen how much changed as a result of Newtown. I mean, we went from thinking that Newtown changed everything to suddenly wondering whether it changed anything when you consider the votes. And now, to whatever degree there's a backlash against the votes, it may turn out that Newtown has some lasting impact. I don't think we know the answer to that yet. But, you know, when you step back and take a longer historical view, you know, and you look at the polling and the impact of Newtown, we're still in a place right now, I think, where the gun rights side politically is stronger than it was, even after Newtown, is stronger than it was 20 or 30 years ago. Because you go back 20 or 30 years, and this was more, you know, there were serious proposals to go to do much more ambitious things in terms of restricting guns than there are today. I mean, even the vote that came before the Senate was a fairly limited issue. It was expanding background checks. It wasn't even universal background checks. And so, you know, there have been times in the past, obviously the Congress passed an assault weapons ban in the 90s. I mean, that went further, I think, than anything people are talking about now.
Yes.
You go back further in time and they were talking about going, you know, doing bigger things. So we're still, I think, living politically in a world where there's a lot of political power on the side of, on the pro-gun, gun rights side.
Craig, a great pleasure, as always, to speak with you. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Craig Gilbert, he joins us fairly often as we do a lot of political discussions, as you know, during these 9 to 11 o'clock hours, and we're lucky to have him reporting. He's a fine reporter, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Gina Dragutinovich is joining me in our studios in beautiful downtown Milwaukee, where the sun is shining. It's the first day of May, and on our Ideas Network, you hear about topics big and small, and it's why you listen. It's why you contribute. Today, we're doing a huge, big pledge drive, but we're putting into a little bitty amount of time. It's a one-day pledge drive, so your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is absolutely critical, because today is our one-day Wednesday pledge drive.
That's right. We want to thank all of you who've pledged already. We're still looking for another 65 pledges this hour. You told us you wanted more programming and less on-air fundraising, and we can only do that with your help right now. Your donation of $5 or $10 a month will only take a few minutes, and you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates pretty much with tax dollars, and we do get funding from the federal government, and we get some from the state, but this is something a lot of people don't know. Listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income.
That's right, it is. And so your support, it's vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know how important listener support is to WPR, please make a pledge. You can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, this is pretty easy to accomplish, to give to WPR. It just takes a couple minutes of your time, a gift of any amount, say $10 a month.
And that donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
This is Audie Cornish of NPR News, and today is One Day Wednesday on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you think your pledge of support for this radio service isn't important, think about the power of one. You're the one who turns on the radio each day, or the one who gets the online stream going. You're the one who thinks about the stories long after you've heard them. You're the one who talks about the stories you hear with friends and family. You're the one we serve and the one we rely on. So please give now, and here's how.
Very easy. Make your donation in support of the programs you count on, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We're asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a one-day pledge drive. It's a great idea. Let's get this done, whether your pledge is $5 a month, $100 a month, $60, anything above, below, in between. We must say that we do deeply appreciate, and actually we also count on your gift.
And there are many ways of saying make your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. We can say step up to the plate. It's baseball season, right?
Oh, it's baseball. Oh, and those Brewers. Oh, my gosh, they're great.
That's right. Make your voice be heard. And you can do any of those things right now by going to WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552 and pledging your support.
You ask for more programming with less on-air fundraising. All right, you're getting what you ask for, so we're making it happen. It's our one-day Wednesday pledge drive, 1 day long. Support the WPR programs that you love and the audacity of a one-day drive. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And we don't expect any one or even 100 listeners to carry the cost of this program. In fact, we're glad that the bulk of our budget comes from thousands of listeners like you.
It lets us know that thousands of people appreciate the programs they get from Wisconsin Public Radio. Become a member. You decide the amount. $5 a month is a great starting place. And pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And today we're asking you to support WPR like you pay for other services you rely on. You have a monthly subscription for your cell phone, your Netflix. The difference here is you decide the cost of the monthly subscription to WPR. So support the programs that are part of your day and choose the monthly amount that works for you. When you donate, go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we just want to say one more thing, and that's you can get, and this is really a darling mug, and I have this thing about coffee cups that I like them white on the inside for the coffee so you can see the coffee, and with a little bit of cream, I just have that thing about coffee cups. Well, this one has white on the inside.
And lots of color.
Oh, it's darling. It's a darling.
Lots of color on the outside.
Yeah, birds, and it's got a nice motto, and you can get it with your pledge of $10 a month or more. And it will make you happy every time you use it, particularly on beautiful days like this or on days that are not beautiful, and they'll be more beautiful because you're drinking out of the coffee cup. So WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is the number. Gina, thank you ever so much.
Thank you.
We continue our conversation. There's so much going on in the world. What is going on with chemical weapons in Syria? Who may have them? How do we know who has them? And here's the cup. It's so cute. And what are we going to do about it? Also, I thought the president's comments yesterday on Guantanamo and the hunger strikers, and we don't want people to die there, and people have been there for an incredibly long period of time. It's very expensive. What are we going to do about Guantanamo? Those are a couple questions that we will be asking Jason Brozek, who is our next guest, assistant professor of government and professor of international affairs at Lawrence University. Professor Brozek, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you again. Yeah, nice to have you with us again.
Although I have to say, it's a lot of pressure to be on during a pledge drive.
It is. Why?
Do I have to be funny now and get people to pledge in?
Do you want to be funny? Go ahead. You want to tell us a joke and get people to pledge in? It's okay with me, but I'll give you time to think about the joke. Okay. Because we have serious issues to talk about first, but I appreciate the sentiment. Let's start with the president's press conference yesterday. I was really struck by his comments on Guantanamo. There are 100 prisoners there who are on hunger strike. What a mess. What is he going to do about this place, and what needs to happen?
Well, I think he's really stuck. I think this is a difficult situation all around. I think what we're seeing is the middle of a process that really started a couple of weeks ago when one of the detainees' op-ed was published in the New York Times. This was the Gitmo is Killing Me op-ed, where the prisoner outlined his and at the time about 40 others' reasons for going on this months-long hunger strike. The op-ed started, I've been detained at Guantanamo for 11 years. I've never been charged with any crime. I've never received a trial. That's now, it's expanded to nearly 100 of the 166
Goodness.
Detainees still at the facility, so almost two-thirds. In fact, so many detainees on hunger strikes that there's extra medical staff being flown in today or yesterday to Guantanamo to do the forced tube feedings. And so this is a really tough situation. In fact, President Obama says he doesn't want people to die, and I agree with that. Secretary Hagel just got a letter from the president of the American Medical Association saying these forced tube feedings may be a violation of the medical code of ethics.
Oh my.
So I appreciated that in the press conference yesterday he said that we were going to renew efforts to close or address Guantanamo Bay as not sustainable or not in the best interest of the American people, that this is damaging to our relationship with allies, this is damaging to our international reputation. But it's not clear what the next step is or should be. Part of the challenge is the same challenge that he faced in 2008 when he tried to close it for the first time, and that's congressional opposition. There's concern about security. There's concern about the appropriateness of civilian courts for these kind of cases. And Congress has passed a number of restrictions, and these are bipartisan efforts, Republicans, Democrats alike. There have been a number of restrictions on moving detainees, on funding the movement of detainees, restrictions on closing the facility. So addressing the issue for Obama really means addressing Congress, and that hasn't gone so well recently.
Well, what do you think we should do? What's possible?
Well, I'll say that so one solution that gets put out is moving the detainees away from Guantanamo. I think we'll keep the naval base there because that's a strategic interest, but closing the detention facility. But I think that moving the detainees to I've heard a supermax facility in Illinois, and I don't think that's some sort of perfect solution, because what we're dealing with here in Guantanamo Bay in the detention facility is not just the where, it's not just the geographic location of the detainees, but the what. And so moving detainees to some sort of Gitmo North isn't really a solution. If they'd still be held indefinitely, if they'd still be held without trial, if they still have no opportunity to see evidence against them, that's just a geographic shift. So one of the solutions, I think, I shouldn't say solution, one of the beginnings of a solution is something that the ACLU suggested, which is for the president to appoint some high-level official to chair this rather than leaving so much of it in Congress's hands, similar to Joe Biden's commission on gun control and gun violence, a high-level commission to figure out what to do with the detainees at Guantanamo Bay and how to achieve that in the face of potential congressional opposition.
What about the president in all of this? Does he shoulder any of the blame? Are his negotiating skills lacking somewhat?
I think that's a great question. So here are my thoughts about President Obama on this. I think he genuinely wants to do something about Guantanamo Bay. I genuinely believe when he says that this harms U.S. national interests and harms our international reputation, it's not good for the detainees, it's not good for the American people, I believe he genuinely believes that. I also understand congressional opposition. I understand what the hurdle is, but he does bear some responsibility for taking this off of the national agenda. The president has he may not have the executive power to move detainees over congressional orders, but he does have the power of the pulpit. The president can go to the public and say, this is important to me, and he can call on the public to make changes. And he's chosen not to do that. He's chosen to direct his political energy elsewhere for other things that I support, and I don't fault him for that. But he does bear some responsibility for not keeping this on the national agenda and not keeping pressure on Congress. When they put up the opposition, when they put up the restrictions, he let the issue drop.
And, Jason, it would seem to me after all these years that we must know every piece of information that you could know about a human being, about these detainees. What do we know about them? Who are they?
Well, we know that a lot of them are Yemeni. There were plans to move 56, I can't remember the number. There were plans to move quite a few of them back to Yemen, to transfer them back to their home country, and then a terror attack was traced back to Yemen, and those plans were put back on hold. So there have been some movements that have been interrupted. So we know the geographic location of a lot of them. I think we know what they were accused of, and I imagine that we have a good sense of what they know. Part of the challenge of releasing these individuals, either back to their home country or really anywhere, is that many of them now have been mistreated. Many of them have been tortured. In years where we did believe that they may have some actionable intelligence, but the fact remains that they've been tortured now, and releasing these individuals may not be in our national interest now, and that runs directly counter to American ideals of innocent until proven guilty and detention without due process. this is really a difficult situation.
What an absolute mess. What a mess.
I don't envy anyone who's involved in this.
Yeah. Jason Brozek is our guest this part of the show. He's an assistant professor of government and professor of international affairs at Lawrence University. I also want to give you our phone number for on-air participation because I'm sure our audience has some thoughts about Guantanamo and thoughts about Syria, too. How do we determine if there are chemical weapons in Syria? And there's some question about who has them. Is the government or the rebel forces may have them, too. This is another thorny thing that the administration is dealing with. Here's how you can join us on air, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and I promise you we'll get to phone calls from you in just a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn in our Milwaukee studios with Gina Dragutinovich, and today is One Day Wednesday, as one of our listeners, Margaret from Wausau, did pledge and said, I love WPR, but I don't love pledge drives. Margaret, we're with you. We don't either. So what better day to donate than One Day Wednesday? She is right. We're doing an entire pledge drive in just one day. Your pledge right now is so important because listener contributions make up the single largest piece of our budget.
That's right. And with your help, One Day Wednesday will be a success. Help us raise the money we need in just one day by making a donation of $5 a month, $10 a month. Every gift now, no matter the amount, makes a difference. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have, Gina, another 57 pledges to go to meet this hour's goal, and I think that we ought to be able to get there. A little over 15 minutes to get those pledges. You know, instead of a week of fundraising, this fund drive, if it's successful, is only going to last one day.
And now it's 56 pledges.
All right.
See, it's working. We're asking you to help us meet this goal, to help pay for the programs you rely on by making your gift now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're passionate about bringing you two great hours of radio, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Monday through Thursday, and we are really proud of what we do, and we work at it very, very diligently. Rhonda Fanning is a heck of a producer, and you're a heck of an audience. What am I? You're a great audience. Our guests are terrific. We talk about books, history, sports, politics, social issues, education. We're here for you with important topics and also fun topics, too, but we can't do it without your support. Listener contributions make up nearly 40% of our budget, and that's really a lot. It's why we're asking for your gift right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And giving is quick, Kathleen. It just takes a few minutes. So tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, how you would like to pay, and consider using a credit card. It saves time, postage, paper, and it puts your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, take the next few minutes to make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Sorry about that.
We got it. We're asking for your support. It's a one-day pledge drive, One Day Wednesday. Your gift might be $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, the right amount. Again, it's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And think of it this way. You might pay $100 a month for your cable service, right? You're willing to do that because you get entertainment and information all month long.
You get those same things on this station. In fact, the quality of what you get on WPR is in many cases better than that $100 a month for your cable service. That quality is only possible with your support. Please become a sustaining member with a gift of $100 a month to Wisconsin Public Radio. Sign up now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And there is no tomorrow in a one-day pledge drive. That's why getting, let's see, we have 55 more to go. Thank you to all those who have donated so far. 55 more to go this hour.
We won't be asking for your pledge tomorrow or the day after or this weekend or next week. We're asking you today only to help pay for your Wisconsin Public Radio listening. Give like there is no tomorrow at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. Please. Give, and thank you for all of your donations. As Marlene from Scandinavia, are you serious? She's listening in Scandinavia, or is there a town named Scandinavia?
Wisconsin.
Oh, Scandinavia, Wisconsin. Where
you
is
bet.
It?
Central.
Oh, Don't, well, I'll have to go there sometime.
Absolutely.
And visit Marlene, who was inspired to donate because listening to WPR all morning long is something that she finds very enjoyable and informative. It is a big part of my day. Thank you very much, Marlene. It's a big part of our day as well. Thank you, Gina. Please give, everybody. This part of the show, we're also having substantive conversation and timely conversation. Jason Brozek is with us, assistant professor of government and professor of international affairs at Lawrence University. We'll move on to Syria in just a moment, but we have a caller, Jason, who wants to talk to you about Guantanamo. Anne is calling from Madison. Hi, Anne.
Well, first of all, we're violating, 900 years of habeas corpus and U.S. law and international law. You can't say that after you've locked someone up for 11 years denied him all rights, all communication, a lawyer for a good part of that time, tortured him, and never charged him because he was probably there under the bounty system of the Bush administration that encouraged people to turn in their fellow citizens in Afghanistan and other places in return for what to them was a lot of money. Just because that guy might be kind of angry once he's released, even though he's been cleared for release, you can't just keep him there because you think he might commit, an act of terrorism. He wasn't a terrorist in the first place, and this is just the flawed logic, and you know, is really bad. But maybe your guest even said this on a another program, but. I have heard that under the United States' guidance, there are rehabilitation centers for people who've been locked up in these, let's call them what they are, hell holes, for many years in Saudi Arabia and in Kuwait. And they can be sent there, and, you know, their feelings of anger and, you know, legitimate anger and bitterness can be, you know, these men can be worked with there before they go back to their home countries. And, you know, to say that a guy was driving a cab and was turned in under the bounty system is going to go out and become a terrorist, just really, you know, that really doesn't make sense.
Professor Brozek.
I agree with the logic. I think Anne's right on. And this is why I think that if the conversation stops at closing Guantanamo Bay detention facility or keeping Guantanamo Bay detention facility open, I think that's too shallow of a conversation. That what we need to talk about is the deeper issues of detention and treatment. That if this is just an issue of moving the detainees so that the guards are looking at different scenery, then that's not the right conversation. That's just a geographic shift. I think what we need to have is a serious conversation about indefinite detention, detention without habeas corpus or due process. Those are the deeper issues, and of course the deeper issues are certainly the more difficult political issues to have.
Thank you, Anne, very much for the call. Let's switch to Syria for a moment. The president said yesterday, this is quite a sentence, we now have evidence that chemical weapons have been used inside of Syria, but we don't know when they were used, how they were used, or who used them.
That's right. We have UN inspectors there now. The world has UN inspectors that are negotiating access right now. Obama wants conclusive evidence before we make any decisions or make any policy changes. And I think we'll see some movement in the next few days. The disagreement between the UN inspectors and Assad's government in Syria is where they're allowed to go and what they would like to investigate. The UN investigators, of course, would like full access. Assad's government would like them limited to one small city, Aleppo. So I think we're going to see those negotiations continue over the next couple of days, and I think we'll see some movement on this issue. The intelligence that there's chemical weapons, I think this may be a game changer, and Obama has called chemical weapons in Syria a mm-hmm. red line. As a National Security Council spokesperson said last night, if this red line was crossed, there's a possibility that our current non-military aid to the Free Syrian Army will become arms. That's something that the Obama administration has resisted up until now, even though former Secretary of Clinton, former CIA Director David Petraeus have urged him to give military aid to the rebels.
Well, let's talk about the rebels for just a moment. Don't we have substantial questions about whether or not these people are good guys?
Well, so the Free Syrian Army is really an umbrella. This is an umbrella organization made up of a handful of rebel groups, a handful of guerrilla organizations. What unites them is opposition to Assad's government. They're also a majority Sunni group. Assad's government forces are primarily Ba'ath Party and are part of the minority Alawite sect. Although for me, I don't think that this is a religious conflict. I think there's a religious division that's part of the conflict, but I think this is a conflict over power and control in Syria. So the Free Syrian Army is this, it's a pretty loose network of guerrilla groups united under this one umbrella. And there's some question. Part of the fear of arming the rebels is the weapons falling into the wrong hands. I think there's some shades of funding rebels in Afghanistan in the 80s here.
So we have to be kind of careful about what action we take, or we find ourselves in a situation where we may not be able to do much good.
That's right. I think there's the fear of the weapons falling into the wrong hands. There's also the fear of escalating the violence that in Syria, fear of further militarizing the conflict. One of the questions that I have about Syria is a strategic question, which is whether the choice of weapon, if it turns out that these chemical weapons were used by Assad's forces, either on Free Syrian Army troops or on civilians, should the choice of weapon be the key variable in our strategy in Syria? Either involvement is in our strategic national interest or it's not. It's not like Assad has been acting with restraint up until now. There have been massive human rights violations over the last 2 years. 70,000 killed, probably half of those civilians. There were a dozen killed in a bombing in Damascus yesterday. The rebel groups, the Free Syrian Army, is involved in some pretty bad things as well, some suicide bombing and sniping attacks. But it's not like the Assad government has been showing restraint, and if they use these chemical weapons, this is the first human rights violation. So the question for me is whether the choice of weapon that they use should be the determining factor in how involved we're likely to be.
We need to go back to Pledge Drive. We need to have you on in the next couple weeks. Rhonda is here in the studio running the board today to talk about this at great length, if you would be so kind as to say yes. How can you say no? I just asked you on the radio. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you. You as well. Jason Brozek, we'll have him on next week to talk more about Syria. Assistant Professor of Government and Professor of International Affairs at Lawrence University. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and Gina Dragutinovich is joining me in our studios today. As you probably know, is One Day Wednesday. This is your radio station. It is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. We are raising money to help to pay for the programs that you rely on.
That's right. We're raising an entire pledge drive goal in just one day, a single day. You make it possible when you pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're looking, Gina, for another 35 pledges in the next 6 minutes or so to help pay for the programs that you rely on.
And raising all the money in one day doesn't mean we need less money. It just means we need to have to meet our goal a little bit faster. Everybody wins when we do, so make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I know you've enjoyed both our guests on both domestic issues and international issues, and those shows will continue. Please take a few minutes to make this hour and many, many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And your pledge online at WPR.org is especially helpful right now. Your pledge at WPR.org keeps the phone lines open for those who don't have internet access. So support the programs you rely on at WPR.org. And of course, you can also pledge at 888-202-2552.
I think the chances are pretty great that the Ideas Network has covered an issue that's close to you, politics, literature. We try to bring shows that you find relevant, interesting, and also enjoyable. It touches your life. These are huge conversations that you don't find anywhere else. You just don't. Make a pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you became a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio, you took an important first step that began a wonderful journey. So now take the next step and become a financial supporter.
And the step from listener to supporter is pretty easy. Decide how much you'd like to give. $5 a month is a great starting point. And then make your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And we thank you for your gift of whatever amount is right for you. Again, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you give today, consider becoming a sustainer. As a sustaining member, you'll give a monthly amount, say $10 or $15, and that will automatically come out of your bank account or credit card. These monthly installments will continue until you ask us to make a change.
And it means that we can depend on you the way you depend on us. Day in, day out, you're in, you're out, you're in control, you can change your giving at any time. It's really a convenient and enduring way to give. So become a sustainer, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have so much to celebrate today, so please give, WPR.org 888-202-2552.
And we're looking for 35 pledges in the next couple minutes or so to meet this hour's goal. The hourly goals are really important to make sure that we end One Day Wednesday successfully. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program and doing on-air board work today. Thanks to Katie Mattson for on-air production. Your pledge is very, very important.